Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Roland the Thompson gunner.
Hi folks, this is Bob Main, your host of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for listening. This is episode number 25 of the Handgun World Show. 30 minutes of podcasting freedom, 30 minutes or less, actually. And this is a practical show. If you're tuning in for the first time, let me say I'm honored to have you as a listener. This is a practical show. We don't get real technical. I'm not a gunsmith, and I'm not ex-military or ex-law enforcement. I am just a private citizen who believes in my Second Amendment rights. I have been carrying a gun about 5 years, and I just talk about my personal experiences and every once in a while do a gun review, only if I've had a chance to shoot that gun. You are going to get a few opinions from me from time to time. It's okay if you disagree with some of what you hear on this show. That is why there is a comments section on the main website underneath each show posting. I am trying to always make this show better. I want you, the listener, to give me feedback on what you hear. So, if there's something that you think I'm all full of baloney on, or if there's something you really agree, or if I forgot something, please send me a comment. And that's the reason why I'm recording this episode, because I forgot a couple things during episode number 24. Again, this is episode 25. I want to talk a little bit more about holsters, and then I have another subject that we'll get into in the second half of this show. But I got a couple of emails about a day after posting that last show saying that I forgot about a few things. And yes, I did. I was talking about concealed carry methods and the type of holsters that you may want to consider. And I forgot about fanny packs. That's one way that people carry. Not really my favorite way, but there are some pretty good fanny packs out there with what they call a quick zip or a quick opening. And basically, it's one little strap that you just yank on, and that fanny pack flips right open, and your gun is inside there. Now, a couple of warnings I want to mention if you're going to carry a gun this way. And typically most people do it in the warmer months where they're wearing shorts and a t-shirt. A lot of ladies like to carry this way. So ladies, if you're listening to this show, you know, fanny packs are very popular. I was at a gun range a few weeks ago, and I was doing some practicing there. And there was a lady behind the counter, a lady who works there. She's one of the sales clerks. Very knowledgeable young lady about carrying a firearm. And she was showing me these fanny packs that they have, specially made for carrying a pistol. And she pointed something out to me that I felt obliged to include on this show. It was her opinion, do not get the black ones. Do not get the total black colored fanny packs, especially with the ripcord that rips them open easily. She said, those scream, I'm carrying a gun. And those are very obvious. It shows people that you're carrying a pistol in there. What she told me is get fanny packs with like a red or a blue colored or a green colored face. And the one that she was carrying had a red face to it. And basically she said that red face kind of distracts the human eye from thinking that that's a gun carrying fanny pack. It just looks like you're carrying an ordinary pack like you go to the state fair with, or something like that. It doesn't shout gun. And it does have a little ripcord on it, but it's the red or the green or the blue color on the face of it fools the eye. And sure enough, when she held the black one up, and then when she held one with a red face or a red front on it, a red colored front, when she held both of those up to her body, when I looked at that, I thought, you know, she's right. She's right. When I take a quick glance at the one with the red face on it, I don't think that that's a gun-carrying fanny pack. So try to find those. And the place that I was at was Target Master in Garland, Texas, because I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So if some of you are listening to this show from the North Texas area, Target Master in Garland, Texas has those fanny packs that I'm talking about. But it's not a bad way to carry a gun. What's great is you can keep your credit cards and your wallet and your money and all your IDs and everything else and your concealed carry license and everything right there. So you don't have to worry about people pickpocketing you either. And if they try to pickpocket you out of that fanny pack, they're going to look at the other end of the barrel of your gun. And it's real easy to draw them, and you can pull them out of those fanny packs quickly. So it might not be a bad consideration, especially in the warmer months. Just try not to get one that's too big. The really big, large ones also scream gun as well. Just get one big enough just to cover up your pistol. And the other method of carry that I forgot about, it's not really a holster, but I'm going to talk about it anyway, and that's vest carry. There are concealed carry vests that have nice pockets on the inside of them for getting your gun out quickly. They're Velcro pockets on the inside, and there's even space in there. There's slots to carry a couple of extra magazines as well. And as long as you got that vest unbuttoned, it's fairly easy to stick your hand in there and whip that gun out. That's not a bad idea. The vest carry is okay. Now, where I live here in North Texas, when it's 104 degrees outside in the summertime, vest carry might not be real practical. Right now, when it's really cold outside and we have below 20 degree temperatures, that's a good way to carry. They were a little bit too expensive for me the last time I saw one. But if you can afford it, get one of those vests. They're not too bad. You can carry a full-size gun in there, and those guns do not print when they're in there. The only thing I'll warn you about is the types of vests that I've seen are obvious gun vests. You don't want those. You know, you don't want to walk around with an obvious gun vest on, because people are a lot more savvy these days, I think, when they look at other people. At least you should be. Your situational awareness should be up there. And I just don't, I'm not a big fan of wearing anything that shows that you're obviously, or even hints strongly that you're carrying a gun. So be careful. When you're buying those gun vests, there are some, if you shop around, I think Cabela's, if you have a Cabela's store near you, and I think Bass Pro Shops also, they've got some that are, you're going to spend a little bit more money, but they've got some that just look like an ordinary vest. What I'm trying to say is don't get the hunting vests, the tactical shooting vests, and things like that. Just my humble opinion, I think they're too obvious. Okay, and the last method of carry that I want to talk about, again, not really a holster, but that is coat pocket carry. A little bit different than vest carry. You know, in the colder months, most of us wear a coat. And I have just a basic leather jacket that I wear a lot. And typically I've got my Glock 26 or my Car Arms PM9 in my coat pocket. I'll just say this. It's a great place to carry because coat pockets are usually pretty big and pretty loose and it's easy to get in there. It's easy to draw the pistol out quickly. Just use a pocket holster. With a pocket holster, the ones that are designed properly, the holster will stay in the pocket, and only the gun will come out. Okay, most pocket holsters have rough material on the outside that holds them inside the lining of your pocket. Now, even the little inexpensive Uncle Mike's holsters, those, believe it or not, they stay in the pocket very well. And there's some custom pocket holster makers out there. There's even some leather makers out there that make good leather pocket holsters. And there's little lips on the holsters, little hooks on them, basically, that hold them inside of pocket. Those work in coat pockets typically as well. I have a nice inside pocket that's on the breast of my coat, and I can fit a decent-sized pistol in there. It wasn't made for that, but I can still fit it in there. And that's not bad, even on the outside of the pockets. Just make sure that you realize that when you take your coat off, there is a gun in there, so be careful where you leave your coat, but that's not a bad way to carry in the colder months. Okay, so for those of you who emailed me those reminders about those three methods that I forgot to talk about, thank you. This is what I mean by customer comments. Those were private emails that came to me. And for those of you who sent those to me, you know who you are. Why don't you go put those comments on the blog as well so that other people who are looking at the website and checking out the show for the first time can see those comments. They can actually read those before they actually listen to this show. I'd appreciate it if you would do that. Now, let's quickly move into the second segment of this episode. Okay, segment number two. Oh, excuse me. Hey, I forgot about one more thing. This will save me from getting some emails. Belts. How could I forget about concealed carry belts? Gosh, it's probably the most important part of concealed carrying a handgun. I did cover this in one of the other podcasts that I did, but I will cover this again. The belt is so important. I personally use what's called kydex-lined leather belts. Inside of the belt is kydex. It's a flexible plastic. And they're made, if they're made correctly, they're very flexible. They're just like a belt. On the outside of it, it's leather. Stitched leather. And it looks real good. So it looks, it's a decent looking belt. So if I do wear a tucked in shirt, I typically wear my kydex lined leather belt anyway, especially if I'm using my tuckable holster. But primarily when I'm wearing an untucked shirt, the belt is so important. Now there's some real good tactical belts. I suggest that you get black belts, just because most holster clips are black if you're using a clip type holster. Alright, so the black clips blend in with the black belt. There's some very good looking ones out there. I use 1¼, however, I'm thinking about switching to the 1½ width. The 1½ width stabilizes the gun so much better. And if you're carrying a heavier gun, especially for those of you who like 1911s, if you're carrying a big steel 1911 loaded up full with 45 ACP rounds, that thing's going to weigh a little bit. So an 1½ width is probably the best. Those kydex lined leather belts are very stiff. They keep your weapon from rocking out quite a bit and keeps them very stable. So important. Don't try to use just an ordinary dress belt, gentlemen. And ladies, if you're going to belt carry, get yourself one of those. They have tactical belts, and they have kydex lined leather belts that are cut for women's styles as well. Now, these aren't going to be cheap. I think I pay around $40 a piece, which I think is a bargain. Most good gun-carrying belts are $60 or $70 a piece. But if you get the good ones, the nice thing is they don't wear out. And that's so important. I can't emphasize strongly enough. I would also recommend buying a gun belt at least a size or two bigger than you normally buy, because of the thickness of your gun and your holster combined, you're going to need that extra room. I also might suggest horsehide belts. Horsehide belts and horsehide holsters, if you can find good ones. The reason is because horsehide versus cowhide, horsehide is a much more natural moisture repellent. It typically lasts longer. It typically retains its shape better. They are harder to break in, so a horsehide belt and a horsehide holster is going to be a little bit more uncomfortable at first. It's going to take about 2 or 3 weeks of good solid wear to wear that thing in, to break it in. But I tell you what, the benefits, in my humble opinion, the benefits of horsehide far outweigh the cowhide. It's worth the extra money, especially if you live in a warm climate where you're going to be sweating a lot. That perspiration bleeds into the cowhide, and it starts to mess up not only your belt, but also your holster, particularly your holster. Horsehide, it repels that moisture naturally, and it's very good at it, so I'll recommend that material for belts as well. I don't think you can get those kydex lined. I think all the kydex lined ones are cowhide leather on the outside. All right, I wanted to cover that on belts. So now, I'm ready for segment number two. Okay, folks, segment number two. Before I get started with segment number two, let me say this. Piss off a liberal. Buy a bayonet. All right, the main topic of segment number two is on sights. This is kind of a subject that really causes a lot of arguments, too. What's the best sight to have on a handgun? You notice how I like to try to tackle these real controversial subjects. You got to have fun. You know, when you do a show like this, you got to have fun. You got to tackle some of the stuff that, yeah, you can't always talk about all the safe stuff all the time. That's no fun. All right, well, it depends on what you're going to use the pistol for. On my target pistol, my Glock 34 that I use for gun games, going to IDPA and IPSC IPSC shoots and stuff like that, competition, I'm kind of an old-fashioned type of a shooter. I learned how to shoot guns that were black-on-black sights. In other words, black rear, black front, you know, what they call notch and post sights. And, you know, front sight's black, rear sight is black. Line them up, put the front sight on what you want to shoot, line them up, and pull the trigger. I like those. Now, there's a lot of people that are real big fans of fiber optic sights because that front sight is nice and bright. You've heard me say this before. What's the most important sight on a pistol? The front sight. I want you to always remember three things. Front sight, front sight, front sight. The rear sights, you'll find that most combat shooters will tell you they don't even hardly see the sights at all. And if they do, they rarely see the rear sights. I notice that when I'm doing practical shooting like IDPA. I'm just worrying about putting that front sight on target. The rear sights are pretty much just kind of a guide. So I can find the front sight pretty easily with just a regular black blade. But some people like the fiber optics. That kind of stuff is good if you're target shooting. That stuff is, I don't know. I've read some blog posts recently on some gun forums, actually. Some trainers are starting to recommend just regular black on black sights for a concealed carry pistol as well. That one's tough for me. I don't know if I want to have just regular black sights on a concealed carry pistol, because I'm thinking about what if I get attacked and it's low light conditions. What if it is dark outside? What if it's almost dark, there's not much light, and I get attacked? I want to be able to see that front sight. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, well, Bob, you know, you just got done saying you're probably never going to see the sights at all. That's right. You're probably going to end up point shooting, which is why I'm going to take a point shooting class coming up this spring. Yeah, point shooting is basically hold an empty gun, unloaded gun, and don't put your index finger on the trigger. Just point your index finger at what you want to shoot at while you're holding the gun, and that's pretty much where your bullet's going to go. And sometimes that's all the time you're going to have, is pull that gun, point it, and pull the trigger. A lot of times that's all the time you're going to have. So with that said, you may not even use your sights at all. But if you do, let me talk about the sights that I think are important for a defensive concealed carry handgun. I'm really becoming a huge fan of XS big dot sights. XS big dot sights. And what they are is they kind of have a V notch in the rear and they have a big white dot in the front that also glows in the dark. At the front sight is a night sight. And actually the rear stripe is a night sight. And what's really nice about these sights is they give you very fast target acquisition. You can drop that, it's like dotting the I. You can drop that big dot on the front on the I in the back and pull the trigger. And what I like is that it's a very large front sight, so it's really easy to pick up. Now, I'm an old guy. Okay, I'm 48. You might say, that's not old, Bob. Well, okay, it's not old, but my eyes feel old. I can't see much, and I really hate wearing glasses. So, you know, my eyesight is not all that terrific, and so that big dot in front, I can pick that thing up fast. And that's what I like. And because the front sight's the most important, that big dot just jumps right out at me, and all I got to do is put the big dot on the bad guy's head and pull the trigger. And basically, that's all I have to remember. That V-notch in the back makes it real easy to line those sights up as well. So I'm a big fan of those. A lot of people who are combat shooters and train that way, they train in combat situations, a lot of people swear by those, because they say that the sight acquisition is so superior, and especially even if you can't get a good full sight picture, you can oftentimes find that front sight very easily. And I'll put a link in the show notes so you can read more on their website about XS sights. And if you think they're not accurate, baloney. I'll put another link to a YouTube video of James Yeager, trainer at Tactical Response, using XS big dot sights on his Glock and shooting steel targets at 100 yards with XS sights. Now, another set of sights that I've used for quite a few years, a little over 3 years actually, to be exact, are True Glow TFO sights. TFO, tritium fiber optic. I'll give you the pros and cons of this. They're fiber optic inserts, and then they also glow in the dark. So you got two in one. In the daytime, they're bright green, and in the nighttime, they're bright green. So you pretty much have bright green sights all the time, front and rear. There are three dots, so you got two dots in the rear and one in the front. Some people think there's a disadvantage with these because they think that the rear sights are distracting. In other words, they take your eyes off the front sight and make you look at the rear sight. For me, I haven't had a problem with that. Now, the front sight is a lot smaller than the XS big dots. So I can see why people may not like the TFOs, because in a combat situation where you're under stress, it might be a little bit more difficult, but they're so bright. They're so bright that it's really hard to miss these folks. And it's hard for me to explain. You just got to try to find somebody that you know that has True Glow, TRUGLO, True Glow TFO sights. TFO stands for tritium fiber optic. And just take a look at how bright they are. I've got them on one of my Glock 19s. The other Glock 19 has the XS big dots. I practice with both of them. On my Glock 26, I've got the XS big dot sights. Same with my Car Arms PM9. I now have the XS big dots on those. A couple of other good manufacturers, Meprolite and Trigicon, both make good night sights. The thing I don't like about those, again, I'm not trying to pick on a manufacturer, but they're white. And in the bright sunlight, they tend to wash out easily. In other words, they're hard to see. And they're not as large as the XS big dots. And, of course, there are three-dot patterns, so that can, for some shooters, that can be a little bit more difficult to line them up quickly. Remember, folks, you're only going to have a split second to find your sights anyway, if you ever do even have that much time. It's not like you're going to be able to have time to stand there and say, just a minute, bad guy, let's make sure I get my front sight right between the two dots in the rear. So if you hold on, don't stab me with that knife just yet. I got to line these sights up before I pull the trigger. Ain't going to happen. So the Meprolites and the Trigicons, just what I found out. Now, your mileage might differ, so send me a comment, but they seem to be a little hard in the bright sunlight. And I like to be prepared for any situation. I like to be prepared if I have to use my gun in the daytime, or in twilight, or in pitch black. Now, some of the advocates of night sights cite an advantage that they say, well, the nice thing about night sights is if you're keeping your gun on your dresser at night or on your nightstand at night, for example, if you're keeping it inside of a drawer at night and it's pitch black in your bedroom when you're sleeping, the night sights glow in the dark and it helps you find your gun quickly as well. And that's a pretty decent argument. So that's another thing you might want to think about with night sights. Now, another type of sight that I've seen used on handguns, believe it or not, are aperture sights. Sort of like peep sights, where you've got a large ring in the back and a post in the front. And I know that there's a manufacturer, I can't think of their name right now, the name of the manufacturer, I think it's Aerotech. I'll look that up, and if I'm wrong about that, they make aperture sights. You know, for a handgun, I just don't think that's real practical. Now, again, I might get thrashed on the comments section or the email here. I might get some Aerotech site or aperture site believers that trash me. Okay, fine. Just have a good reason for your comments. But first of all, they're large. They're very large, and it might prevent the gun from fitting in a holster properly. That's something else you have to think about. Are the sights too large for the holsters? And second of all, it just seems like it's unnecessary, and it just seems to me like more you have to fiddle with. On a rifle, yeah, wonderful. Aperture sights are great on a rifle. But on a handgun, I don't know about that. I just don't think that that's something practical. They're kind of expensive. But again, just my opinion. You do what you want with this information. You know, take the best and leave the rest. That means take the best of what you hear and throw the rest of what you hear me say out the window. All right, now let me get back to the notch and post sights for a minute, and then I'm going to wrap it up. For competition purposes, if you're going to go out and shoot IDPA, I would recommend that you get sights with a real thin front sight and a wide notch in the rear. For fast shooting and being able to get that sight picture quickly, that's a real advantage. Now again, in competition, you've got time to get the sight picture. In actual self-defense and combat, you may not, but in competition, you do. And I use what's called Savigny sights. They were designed by IDPA champion Dave Savigny, and I'll go ahead and link to some of his videos. And they're manufactured by a company called Warren, so they're called Warren Savigny sights. I got them for, I think, $72 or so. They're black and black. Now, they make them in different configurations, but I love these because the rear notch is very wide and the front post is very narrow, and I really like that. To me, that just feels real good. It looks good. I can pick them up fast. For precision shooting, they're fantastic, and they're low profile as well. So I really like those Warren Savigny sights. There's a lot of people like what's called the Heine Straight 8 sights. Those are good. Some people like the Dot the I type, which are similar to combat sights, which, you know, can't go wrong with those either if you're used to shooting that way. Sights are a personal preference, and you can get on gun forums and blogs, and you can get thousands of different opinions on sights. So really, you just got to try what's best for you. But I thought I'd give you some of my own recommendations, because I've spent a lot of money on sights, folks, a lot of money. And I really think I'm done spending money, especially on my my concealed carry pistols. These XS Big Dots are just way too hard to beat. They're just fantastic. And these Warren Savigny sights are pretty tough to beat on my my Glock pistols. Now, for 1911s, there's very good target sights for those as well. They're not made by the same manufacturer, the Savigny sights, but they're real good target sights for 1911s. And if you're going to be competing, consider adjustable sights for 1911s. Those seem to be real good, but, you know, take your pick. Fixed sights versus adjustable rear, whatever works best. If you're a reloader and you customize a lot of your own ammunition, you're probably going to want an adjustable rear sight. And there's a lot of adjustable rear sights for any pistol. You know, the reason being is because as you load each round differently with different pressure and different bullet weights and stuff, you're going to get different ballistics, and the bullet's going to travel a little bit differently with each one. So you're going to want to probably be able to move that rear sight, either move it left and right or up and down. That's called adjusting for elevation and windage, depending on how you reload. Now, I don't reload. I probably should. It's something that I'm strongly considering getting into, but I don't right now. I just shoot factory ammunition all the time. So fixed sights are fine for me. I pretty much buy the same ammunition all the time. I know how it shoots. I know where the bullets are going, and I know how to compensate if they're going a little bit different direction. Most of the time, it's me. It's the shooter. It's not the gun, or it's not the sights. And that's a subject for another show. That's it. That's segment number two. I hope you got some decent info out of that. Thank you for listening to episode number 25 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for listening. Hope you find some good sights that you like. Take care, and I'll talk to you next time. In Palestine and Berkeley.